Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want to get some punt. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I am John Schmelk. That guy over there is Lance Mehta with you for one full hour talking NFL and more specifically New York Giants football. You can reach us on the telephones at 201-939-4513 or you could hit up Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat and we can discuss some Giants football there as well. And Lance, obviously the Giants still in search for a defensive coordinator. We can't really go into specifics on names here because the Giants do not confirm or discuss guys they bring in for interviews. But if you're out there reading the papers, you know the names have been brought up. We could talk about that. But Lance, as you go through this and you take a look at the type of coordinator you would want the Giants to bring in, what are some of the prerequisites for you? When you take a look at these coordinators and you say, this is the type of guy I'm looking for, this is what I want my defense to look like next year.
Well, I think that you want a guy that can evaluate the Giants' defense currently. Obviously, personnel is likely going to change given how free agency and the draft plays out, but a guy that has a vision where he can improve on some of the elements that the Giants showcased last season. Their pass rush got going in the later stages of the season. You want that to continue and carry out through the stretch of 16 games, and you also want to be able to get back to a defense that can stop the run. So I'd want a guy that at least has a vision coming in that is going to be able to shore up some of those issues and build upon some of the positives that were showcased last season as well. Number two, I think given the fact that we don't know about the long-term length of Tom Coughlin's reign here, I'm sure he's looking for a guy that perhaps is a little bit more established, somebody who has experience within the NFL or other organizations. So I think that would be another element that probably would come into play as they start to interview candidates. But those, to me, are the two top priorities right now when they're evaluating these players and candidates as
well.
And
we can obviously talk about that. We can talk about some of the Giant free agents. We can talk about anything else New York Football Giants at 201-939-4513. But before we get to your phone calls, I do for a second, Lance, want to talk a little bit about the national championship game that was last night between Oregon and Ohio State. Ohio State brings home a national championship. Urban Meyer becomes the only other college head coach besides Nick Saban to win national championships with two different teams. Excellent job. I thought he outcoached the Oregon head coach, and I thought Ohio State proved to be overall the better team. And I was talking to a couple of Ohio State fans that work here upstairs, Dan Salamone among them, and this is a particularly sweet one for them because it's one I don't think they expected. You go through three quarterbacks. A lot of people didn't even want Ohio State in the Final Four in the playoffs. And I just thought it was a very big statement game for the Buckeyes, and it showed that they were probably the best team in college football this year.
Well, they pounded the football, especially down the stretch. Oregon absolutely had no answer to the running game, and with respect to what it says about Ohio State, number one, I think it says that the playoff format works, because when the fourth seed can
100%.
Go out and knock off the top team and the number two team, I think they did right for college football, and I think they should continue to expand the field. I'd like to see perhaps 8 or 12 teams in it a little bit later on.
I don't
on.
Think you could do 12, because then it's going through too many weeks.
But you know what? There's no reason why the college football season can't go through the course of January.
Yeah, academics.
The kids are off for most part of January. This is off. This is between semesters. Listen, you and I went through. We know. January, you kick back, you relax. They'd love that. If I'm an athlete, I'd rather play most of my games when I don't have to worry about classes. So that would be ideal. And the majority of the postseason games would be during the course of what the offseason is.
So some of these schools run that wacky
three semesters or something
so
like
I'm
that.
I'm not sure
Correct.
How those work yes. with that. But bottom line is that you're right. The playoff system worked. And I think it's a good thing that you get to see, and this is how I'm going to wrap this round back to the Giants here, you get to see some of these top players go up against big-time competition multiple times at the end of the years. You get the bowl games. You get the conference championship games. And then you get the playoffs. So you have multiple opportunities here to see these guys that could go into the draft. And the one thing, before I talk about a specific guy or two from last night, the one thing that really amazes me when you think about college football, people love college football. The rating last night on ESPN was, you know, out the roof. It was unbelievable.
Well, they had it on 17 different channels,
well,
so
by
you
the
couldn't
way,
miss it.
And I want to talk about that, too, in a second. But, you know, the level of football is high, and it's entertaining. But you look at the game yesterday between the two best teams in the country, Out of the guys on the field last night, how many guys do you think play in the NFL? 10 to 12?
Very few. Small percentage.
Maybe 15 at most. And most of those guys are going to be bit players, special teams guys, things like that. And the level and the jump you have from the highest level of college football possible to the National Football League is such a quantum leap. And it just made me think about how difficult it is to really scout and evaluate these guys, to understand how a player, even playing well against the best in college football, will adjust to having to play guys even better than that in the NFL. And I think it's the evaluation process is so tough, especially with the spread offense. Now, obviously, you'll talk about Marcus Mariota in that regard, and we are for the next 4 or 5 months until the NFL draft gets here. The evaluation process for these scouts and these general managers is so difficult.
Well, because schemes are different, as you just alluded to, from college to the pros. So you have to take that into consideration. You also have to take into consideration the overall speed of the game, too. I think it changes drastically from the college to the professional level. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, you realize, hey, there's a great deal of talent in college football, and we're not here to downgrade any of the guys. Very difficult to do that in college, especially when you have to balance a lot of other things that you don't necessarily have to do when you're an NFL player. But it's very difficult to make the jump because, you know, let's face it, overall – in college football, and for those of you who are very passionate about the game and you follow it, to me, there's not a great deal of defense in college football from a national scale as to where it is with respect to the NFL. You have a number of low-scoring games in the NFL, and it can happen on any given Sunday. College football, you have a lot more offensive clinics.
I think the problem you have is that with the reduced practice time, they design these offensive systems, and there simply aren't enough speed and talent on the defensive side of the ball to counter some of the stuff these systems do. While in the NFL, you can run this Oregon offense, do all these like quick passes, these spread things, you know, the quick screens, the quick hitches and all that stuff, but there are so many good athletes and players on defense that that sort of stuff doesn't work consistently. And you can't just outspeed and out-talent the other side of the ball, which I think is kind of what happens a lot in college. I think generally you have more athleticism on offense than you have on defense for a lot of these teams because, frankly, where do the best athletes want to play? They want to play on offense because you get the glory, you get the touchdowns, you run it, you catch it, you throw it. And I think that's the problem you run into.
Well, with respect to Oregon's defense against Florida State, they did a great job.
They did.
But Oregon's defense, and this is similar, we could bring it back to the NFL, John, it reminds me of the Philadelphia Eagles, a defense that relied so much on takeaways. But if you don't cash in the takeaways, which happened yesterday, they had four takeaways, but they settled for only 10 points off those four takeaways, you start to see the true colors of a defense. And they were able to get by against Florida State. Ohio State, a little different. You have a mobile quarterback. You also have a very pound-for-pound type of running game. When you combine both of those factors, if you don't have strong enough linebackers that can contain that, you're going to struggle.
And Joe at JCSO2008 on Twitter points out, four turnovers in the NFL equal loss. Last night, Oregon was -4, and they were still trailing by and they were still trailing by 21-20 after they settled for that field goal inside the 20-yard line. So, you know, it's just a very different game, and I want to bring this back to Mariota because I'm sure we'll talk a lot about the draft over the last few months, and I think it's appropriate to discuss him specifically after watching him play a couple of bowl games and go through the Pac-12. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch a ton of his games throughout the year. I watched a few. I did watch the two playoff games, and this has nothing to do with his performance last night and the score. But, Lance, you don't see him drop back much, you know, settle in the pocket, look at his first receiver, go to his second read, go to his third read, and complete a pass. It's usually that one read. If it's not there, he moves. You don't see him do a whole lot of, you know, squeezing the ball into small areas down the field like NFL quarterbacks often have to do. And I think he has the ability to do those things. But in college, he hasn't been asked to do those things.
Yep.
And that's not his fault. But I do not think it's going to be a super smooth transition for him into the NFL. I think it's going to take some work. I think it's going to take some patience, which is why, for his sake, I hope he doesn't go as the top pick or a top three pick. Because when you go that high, you know how it goes. You have so much pressure on you to be good right away. You know, you're not going to do with what, you know, what the Titans did with Steve McNair. You know, back in the late 90s, where he sat on the bench for 2 full years and didn't play.
Aaron Rodgers, too, sat on the bench.
And, you know, he ended up going later in the first round,
still,
but he was projected as a top 10 guy.
Yeah,
and you just don't really have that now because those teams at the top of the draft, they don't have a Brett Favre to play ahead of them. They need this guy to come in there and step in right away because they're desperate to not see Ryan Fitzpatrick under center anymore. You know, pick out whoever you want to pick out. So I think it's very interesting that – you know, this guy's career, I think, is going to be dictated, Lance, based on where he goes and how quickly he's asked to play. And if he keeps dropping, does he get to a guy like Chip Kelly, who maybe could make that transition a little bit smoother because of the offense he runs?
The system is what you're talking about, John. You think he's more of a system quarterback, and based on what we see in college, he's comfortable in this system, and you're right. They haven't asked him to do maybe other things that other NFL teams are going to ask him to do, so it gets back to the GM process, the coaching process. Very hard to evaluate guys who are comfortable in one system.
And again, I think he can become that guy. He seems to have the arm strength for it. He's big enough. He has the athleticism. Everyone says he's a really smart kid. Everyone says that he's a hard worker. So that's a good formula that he can develop into a quarterback anyway. I just don't think it's going to be a right away type of thing. I think as an athlete, in terms of being ready for the NFL and playing quarterback, even with your head in the NFL, I think if you put the off-the-field stuff away, I think Jameis Winston is much more prepared to step in right away and take over an NFL offense.
Well, he's more of your typical pocket type of passer. He's also a bigger guy. He can handle his fair share of hits compared to Mariota. So, I mean, I think you look at them from a physical perspective, as well as Cardale Jones, if he decides to go into the draft, the third string quarterback for Ohio State, also a physical guy, a guy that works within the pocket, does look to run. So those are the types of things that they're going to look to evaluate. You hit on an interesting topic, and we can bring this back to the whole NFL subject. You know, when it comes to young quarterbacks, I would argue whether you're the number one overall pick, John, or you're taken in the third round or the fourth round, I think the wise game plan is, and there's plenty of examples in NFL history, to sit. Even if you have a team that is urgent to throw in a guy. I mean, look at Johnny Manziel this year, and even in a small sample size of seven quarters, he still struggled. But I think whether it works out or not, just sitting back and watching from the sideline helps in the development of a quarterback, because what you're seeing during the course of the week in the classroom, you know, you can't duplicate that. Once you're thrown into the fire, you can't get that time back. So I would say any team, whether you need a quarterback, you need a quick answer, you got to think to yourself, maybe I should get a stopgap for a year or two and let the young guy develop.
The way I look at it, remember when you're back in school and let's say you're going into either, you know, pre-calculus or even calculus or something like that for the first time, and you see all these formulas. It's complicated, and you get the answers to the questions right. But you know what? It takes you going back, maybe making a correction here or there, and really thinking about it, all right? And you can do it, but you don't get it. It's not natural to you. And I think at the beginning of any rookie's career, and I think it's exacerbated for the guys that come out of those non-NFL spread systems, you know, it takes you a while to figure this stuff out. And until it becomes instinctual and natural and you get used to it and it's familiar, that's when you can succeed. And you're right, it takes some time.
Plus, you also need some consistency and stability from not just the quarterback, but how about the offensive coordinator? Another guy that we could throw into the conversation, Alex Smith. And I've brought this up a lot since there's a number of teams looking for offensive coordinators. Smith was the number one overall pick, high expectations, similar to what Mariota is looking at. And it wasn't that Alex Smith didn't have the facets of his game that he could apply it to the NFL, John. It was the fact that in his first five seasons, he had five different offensive coordinators.
Right.
So a young guy also needs stability, I would say, at that position. If you're drafted high, not only do you have to have some upside and physical attributes, you need to have a guy that has a game plan where he can utilize you. So I hope wherever Mariota goes, wherever Winston goes, they have an offensive coordinator in place that's going to be there for a few years.
Stability. Stability is a huge key, and that hurt Alex Smith. He's finally settled in now.
Right.
To a system and a way of playing which is successful for him. Now, he's not a guy that throws for 300 yards a game. He's not going to throw it downfield and throw 20-yard outs. He's a short pass type of thrower. He goes underneath. He checks down. And that's the type of quarterback that he is. And you can win with that as long as you have the defense and the running backs to support him. 201-939-4513. We'll talk more about this if you want. Anything else in the NFL, the New York Football Giants, you name it, we got it. Let's go to the phones for now, however, and go to Susan in Bohemia first. Susan, what's going on? How are you? Good morning.
Good morning. I hate to change the subject. Is that okay?
Go ahead, Susan. Whatever you want to talk about.
Okay, great. Well, I wanted to know if you guys saw the analysis done by 538 on the most clutch quarterback of all times in the postseason.
I did not, but I will look that article up right now, Susan. What did it say?
Oh, you have to. It's a very long article, okay, because it's, you know, very technical. You know what 538 is? They do all the big analysis, the political analysis, and they just don't do it on just the statistical numbers, but on all the other factors that go into it. But anyhow, based on it, and they first base it on the probabilities of wins and losses, okay, that favors usually the underdogs. Well, on that list, Eloy rates number one. But because it does favor the underdogs, even though Montana and the Elways and the Warner is up there on the list, you also have, you know, the Trent Differs and names I never even heard of up there. And a lot of the higher named quarterbacks are lower down, a little lower down, not too much, but lower down. But when they do the analysis again, based on quarterback performances relative to replacement quarterbacks, where the principle being that the better the quarterback, the more his team would be harmed if they removed him. So that now that kind of negates the underdog factor. So all the other higher-ranking quarterbacks did move up the list, and the no-names didn't. They moved down the list, needless to say. Eloy was still rated the number one greatest clutch quarterback in postseason history.
So basically, Susan, from what I can gather here, and I'm kind of breezing through it right now, they take the quality of the team, they figure out the percentage of games they should have won, then
right,
they take
exactly
a look at the record of what the quarterback actually did, and they take that difference. So basically how that quarterback helped this team overcome their talent level and expectations, and that's how they rate these guys out.
Right, and then, like I said, but putting in the aspect, too, that if another quarterback was in there, just a replacement quarterback, so just because then it does still favor. If it was just that analysis on that alone, it would favor the underdogs. But if you see the second chart, if you
I'm scroll looking
down,
at it right now,
a very
yeah
long article.
I got it.
The second chart puts it in perspective where, like I said, it was a replacement quarterback, and that's where you see Eloy is number one. I think it was Montana was two.
And Kurt Warner is three.
Know, Elway
and
three.
And Flacco's up there, yeah.
Like that. Yeah, you see that? So I think that's a pretty fair analysis, and I'm just thrilled that Eloy is considered number one by such a prestigious firm anyhow. But you do have to read the whole thing. For those who are going to go online and read it, you do have to read that whole article and go all the way down because it's the last chart that tells it all. And, you know, he accounts for all of that. So it's really excellent. It's really excellent.
I will actually go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I just would like to bring out one other thing. In the NFL quarterback passer rating, Eloy ranks 17th. But in the total quarterback rating, the ESPN, which is a true assessment because it's not just the statistical numbers, but what the quarterback contributes, I think, to winning. I think it's each play they do it on, each situation of the play, which is a more accurate evaluation of a quarterback performance. He's ranked number seven, and that's without an O-line for most of the season, one reliable receiver for most of the season, no running game, no consistent tight end, and having to learn a new offensive system. So I think our quarterback is still a great quarterback, and I get really upset when people are looking to get his head still and get rid of him. And with that said, I just would like to know if there is any word on the Giants extending Eli's contract. And I thank you very much, and I'll listen to your answer.
Thank you, Susan.
Bye-bye
good
now
to hear from you.
Appreciate
it's been too
the call
long. Don't be a stranger. Thanks for calling in. Well, I have not heard anything about them trying to extend Eli yet, but of course this is very early in the offseason. That could happen at any time here. They could be talking, too, for all I know. So
they're not going to make that publicly
yet
known anyway.
But, you know, Jerry Reese and John Maron, Tom Coughlin talked about this during their press conferences, Lance, and, you know, they discussed at times, and I think Jerry Reese focused on this specifically, I was trying to remember exactly who did, about how many good years he thinks Eli has left, and he said he's not a baby, but at the same time he's not an old man. So I think they do believe he has a lot of good years left. You know, at this rate, you can probably play good quarterback until you're 38, give or take. So he probably has a good 4 or 5 seasons left in him. And look, I'm sure everybody wants Eli Manning to retire as a Giant, and I can't imagine they're not going to be able to figure out a way to keep him here for a long time.
I would assume they're going to do everything they can. And John Mara said he wants Eli Manning to retire as a Giant. And Jerry Reese also had mentioned that it's impossible to determine how much longer Eli Manning could play. I mean, there's no exact science, and that's a fair assessment. I think any GM would say that. In an ideal world, you hope your quarterback stays healthy, and you hope that he never has to retire, so you don't have to make that transition. But I think the Giants are looking at retaining Eli Manning, but at the same time, like any other organization, thinking ahead and thinking about who to bring in or who to develop so that the transition is smooth. Because what every NFL team strives to do, John, at the end of the day, even if you're set with your quarterback, and the Giants are with Eli Manning, you always need to say to yourself 4 or 5 years down the line, or 6 or 7 years down the line, you know, who can bridge the gap so that there aren't maybe 2 or 3 rebuilding or retweaking type of down years where you're trying to rely on a young quarterback.
Though those are hard to avoid.
Of course, it's very difficult to avoid.
And usually, frankly, having those 2 down years isn't a bad thing, because you get those very high pick in the drafts and you can maybe get your replacement quarterback or get a star elsewhere getting a very high pick, and that's how you rebuild your roster.
True, but at the same time, if you can have the young guy learn from the star, I mean, that would also be a very comfortable situation.
There are
situation.
Very few Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck situations
yes,
out there.
Yes, or Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers would be another right. one, too, yes. where you had Aaron learn from Brett over the years, and then the transition happened, and it was smooth. The Packers didn't really have many down years.
Drew Bledsoe to Tom Brady?
That would be another one, correct. You get lucky, and it really is pure luck.
Yeah, where no one thought Tom Brady was going to do that.
Of course, nobody expected that. That's why he went so late in the draft.
Montana to Steve Young, another one. Trying to think of some other names out there where it worked out.
I think we covered a lot of the good ones in terms of the quick transitions where you have a backup. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And it's not necessarily having a rookie backup, but it's a backup that has plenty of classroom experience, which is what I was getting to earlier.
Quite frankly, Kerry Collins to Eli Manning was a pretty seamless transition. You had that year where Kerry got hurt and you had that down year, but you didn't have that year in between where there was no one here that you thought could be the quarterback. You went right from Kerry to Kurt Warner / Eli that following year.
Well, and that gets back to what we were discussing earlier, yeah. John. If you could get a veteran in here year 1, year 2, while you have the young guy, just to provide the stopgap and maintain consistency, as you were discussing, you know, that could help. And this way you don't have to just throw the young guy into the fire so it becomes like a baptism by fire.
Quite honestly, though, I don't think the Giants have to even concern themselves with drafting Eli's quote-unquote replacement for probably another, 3 years?
Of course not, because if you're going to bring in a rookie, you're looking at a 4 or 5 year deal. By the time Eli retires, that guy's going to be a free agent.
Yeah, he's going to be gone.
And somebody else may want a starting quarterback, exactly. or you're going to have to pay him without much stock on his resume. So you're right. You don't have to necessarily think about that right now. But, you know, let's say you extend Eli Manning. You assess, okay, this is how many more years we're probably going to have him on the books. When we get to year 2 or year 3 into the extension or whatever it may be, and this is all hypotheticals, you know, then maybe you could start to evaluate the young guys.
Well, then as Jerry Reese said, who knows? Maybe, you know, that Peyton Manning neck fusion surgery came out of nowhere. You know, maybe Eli has a bad injury in 2 or 3 years, then all of a sudden you have to accelerate the plan. There's no way to tell. That's why a lot of this long-term planning sometimes is really for naught, and that's why you wisely called it hypothetical, because that's all it is.
Of course.
You know, one bad tackle, one bad sack, your plan will have to change like that in a second. So really sweating about this long-term stuff, I think, sometimes can be foolhardy.
The one thing I wanted to mention before we get back to the calls and the tweets, and this is based on what Susan, the last caller, brought up, and I think she really hit it right on the nose. Eli Manning, regardless of his numbers and how they fluctuate, the fact that he's able to make do when sometimes the elements around him are not ideal, I think that says a lot about him as a quarterback, and something we've discussed on this program multiple times, and I said this specifically this season, given what happened to the NFC East, his durability. The fact that he has withstood pressure, hits, you name it, also says a lot about Eli Manning compared to other quarterbacks.
And, you know, just on the clutch thing, no one has ever questioned that Eli Manning plays his best football in the playoffs. He's played great football in the playoffs. But, again, I think a big key in those years, folks, and this isn't a negative by any means, the Giants put good teams around him. Eli wasn't asked to put the whole team on his back and win. Look at the 2 Super Bowls. He didn't have to score 20 points in those games in order to win.
Defense.
Which is not a problem. That's not a criticism. You have to have a good teams to win. It's a team sport. But that's the key. You know, you can have the clutch quarterback. That's great. But he also has to have help. Why did Andrew Luck beat the Broncos on Sundays? Because their defense did a fantastic job on the Broncos offense. And Peyton Manning is either done because his arm's finished or his legs don't let him get any juice on his balls anymore. However you want to look at it, that's why they won. Yeah, Andrew Luck was great. But without that defense, wouldn't have mattered.
Tony Romo's another example this season. They gave him an offensive line. They balanced the offense with the running game, and he was able to change his course of action on the football field. So, of course, the weapons you have around you help the quarterback out immensely. At the same time, the quarterback needs to make plays, but there's compliments. You can't overlook those compliments.
Does anyone doubt Drew Brees' ability to as a quarterback?
Not at all.
Saints stunk this year.
Defense struggled. Some pass protection issues. It hurts. It hurts any quarterback. The greats, the ones in the middle of the pack, whoever you want to rank quarterbacks, I always say quarterbacks need help. And they need the weapons around them.
And by the way, I haven't done a whole lot of, you know, research into how ESPN does their QBR, to be quite honest with you, because a lot of these big aggregate numbers where you don't really know how it comes out, I don't like using them because I don't feel like they give a good context for what the numbers mean. But just looking at the rankings for that QBR, Susan did mention, and she was right on the money, Eli 7th at 70.9. Again, the number really not that important. But if you want to go through the top 10 just very quickly, I'll actually give you the top 12, because I think these are most of the very good quarterbacks in the league that people consider to be those upper echelon guys. Tony Romo actually came out as the number one guy in total QBR at 82.7. Aaron Rodgers right behind him at 82.6. And again, I think, you know, Rodgers is asked to do a lot more. He had a lot more yards than Romo, but I guess this is the efficiency that Romo had is what put him ahead of Rodgers. But that makes me question the numbers. I'm not sure Romo should be ahead of Rodgers next.
Plus, Aaron Rodgers' turnover differential was through the roof this season,
too. That's why
too.
I'm surprised.
Yeah,
I'm
a little surprised as well.
Anyway, Peyton Manning, number three at 77.2. He probably would have been higher if he had a better final month. Tom Brady, fourth at 74.3. Ben Roethlisberger, fifth at 72.5. Drew Brees, sixth at 71.6. And Eli Manning, 7 at 70.9. And frankly, those to me, and I'll give ESPN credit for putting this rating together, to me, those are the seven best quarterbacks in the league, generally speaking. Now, the other guy that could be in that list and in that top seven is Andrew Luck. He comes in at 11 at 63.8. Now, that probably has a lot to do with all the interceptions he throws, and that drops him down. Russell Wilson is at 12 at 62.4. Obviously, he doesn't turn it over, but he's also not asked to do as much as these other quarterbacks. So I think his placement is good. Flacco's at 8, Matt Ryan at 9, Phillip Rivers at 10. And I think those guys generally, as quarterbacks, are bunched in a group. I think those guys are all very similar. So the way this worked out this year, I really think that the ESPN quarterback rating, I got to give him credit. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
If you click on total QBR, they don't tell you how they get to that number on the site.
It's some weird standard deviation. I don't think I can find it somewhere.
No, I'm just curious if they had it right.
Unless you have advanced statistics degree,
yes, AP
I don't think
calculus,
you're going to figure that out.
Got to dig real deep.
I did take AP statistics.
Wow, look at you.
Mr. Cher in high school.
Going back down memory lane.
I did not do calculus, though.
I did AP calculus.
Oh, did you really?
Don't ask me, because I don't remember much of it.
See, here's the problem. I didn't want to do AP calculus, because I felt like it wasn't really math anymore. You're not really like – I feel like it's more like scientific formulas than it actually is mathematics.
Well,
you know
statistics
what I mean?
Was not offered in the curriculum, so it was calculus or nothing.
I was lucky, so.
There you go. You had more of a selection.
Yes.
So
Mr.
we credit Shea. Midwood High School.
Yeah, he did a good
Congratulations.
Job. Congratulations. Far superior to Lincoln in every way.
Well, I don't know about that, but we'll save that for another program.
Except for
moving
the,
along.
Except for maybe the basketball program.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You happen to leave out athletics.
By the way, the future star running back for Ohio State from Erasmus. You saw that last night, right?
Brooklyn. Yes, Brooklyn's own.
He'll be replacing Zeke, who, by the way, will be a very high pick in the draft next year.
His stock went pretty high.
He's pretty good.
Yes.
Wow.
Now it's going to depend on the offensive line and so forth, who he plays
but
with, but he's got a lot of talent.
He's pretty good.
Absolutely.
That kid can run it.
I'll tell you, the Big Ten overall, John, had a number of great running backs this season.
They did. Melvin Gordon, obviously. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, Ohio State built like an SEC team, not built like a Big Ten team, traditionally. Much less, you know, power football, spread it out. Run it, some speed, much more built like an SEC team than a Big Ten team. And scary enough, as they pointed out last night, Urban Meyer said he thinks next year's team is going to be his most talented team based on his recruiting classes. So,
well, I'm not surprised.
Look out.
Those schools continue to bring in the talent.
What do you think, they'll just start a different quarterback each quarter?
Who knows?
And they'll just rotate
they
them?
Probably could have success. Now, I was going to say, his challenge should be next season. The goal is four quarterbacks during the course of the season.
Oh, because maybe he gets put up by quarter. You can have a quarterback per quarter. You guys play four guys in
Guy comes up clutch in the first quarter, the second, the third, and the fourth. You have everything covered.
You set it all up.
Absolutely.
You customize your playbook based on who's in the game.
Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But your point about SEC football, you know, this is why the college football playoff is so great, because we're not going to see SEC teams against Big Ten teams under the old system. It's just the rankings, the computer, the top two teams at the top of the list. And with the way that the schedule is limited, you can't play a lot of powerhouse teams outside of your conference during the regular season. So if the playoff doesn't come to fruition, we're never seeing these matchups.
I want to touch on the ESPN coverage, but I want to get to the calls first. Dre in Atlanta has been holding. Dre, thanks for being patient, pal. You're up next. What's going on?
What's going on, Lance? What's going on, John? How you guys doing?
How are you, bro?
Doing well. How's everything with you?
Great. That was one hell of a game yesterday. I got a couple of questions real quick.
Yeah.
One, it seems like Raheem Morris is out of the running. He's no longer a favorite. So it seems like we're holding on to Pepper Johnson, but it seems like we're pigeonholing, waiting for Spags or Schwartz. You know, I think, you know, it's going back to Spags.
Wait, Andre, Dre, I don't understand. How are they pigeonholing themselves? They're interviewing a bunch of different candidates.
Well, no, they're interviewing the same candidates, but it seems like They're just interviewing him. And if Spags said, you know what, yeah, I want to come back, we're going to go ahead and go with Spags.
How do you know that?
It's just a feeling, you know. you have that niche, you have that feeling. It seems like they're waiting on Spags.
Now, let me say this. Dre, didn't you feel like last year they were waiting for Mike Sullivan to be the next offensive coordinator? How'd that work out?
It didn't work out at all.
You can only read, Dre, you can only read so much into the media speculation. And the other thing,
exactly.
You know, even if Spags is the favorite, let's say hypothetically, you still want to interview other candidates because you don't know. Somebody may wow you that you never expected.
Yeah, I mean, remember the story with the Steelers. They weren't, you know, Mike Tomlin wasn't the favorite going into that job interview. He stepped in there and he blew the Rooneys away, and they're like, we got to hire this guy. So they hired him.
Well, hopefully we can get someone that can wow us and we can go back on top. My next question is, now, how would you feel if Cordell came out, declared himself for the draft, and Giants picked him up in the later round, and he sat and got to learn behind Eli? Now we have a 6'5", 260 quarterback that can run, has an arm cannon to throw to some of the weapons, because Odell is young. Victor Cruz got a couple more years in him. So what do you think about that? And I'll listen to your comment up there.
Thanks, Dre. Appreciate it.
I
think by the time he's ready to play, if he ever does become ready to play, that Eli would still be your quarterback, and then you'd have to figure out what to do, to be quite honest with you. And quite frankly, a lot of people were kind of throwing his name out there last night as a guy that they think could be an NFL guy. Look, he has the body for it. He has the size for it. He has the arm strength for it. I get that. He seems like a pretty, you know, despite his tweets a couple years ago, he seems like a pretty mature kid. I just don't know if he has that, you know, multiple reads, you know, dropping back, finding your receiver, anticipating, putting it into small spaces type of stuff that you want out of a pro quarterback. But physically, certainly, he has all the tools where you think that, you know what, he could make it if he can figure out the pro-style passing game.
Well, the sample size is extremely small.
What, four games?
Barely played. Three games.
Was it three?
Yeah, three games.
Four.
So maybe it was four. Maybe it was an additional game that I'm missing out. In terms of the clutch games, it was three.
Correct, yes.
When you take into consideration the Big Ten and the two playoff games. But it's still a very small sample size to say, hey, he's going to come into an NFL team and he's going to wow everybody. Now, using the last caller, Dre, his example is, well, we're not asking him to come in and be the starter day one. We're asking him to come in, utilize his raw talent, develop it at practice in the classroom, and then carry on the tradition that the Giants tried to build. But I would agree with John, and we touched on this earlier, you know, this is a really too early in the game for the Giants to be thinking about the next QB, because you figure, even if you want to play the game of speculation, Eli's got, at minimum, at least another 4 or 5 years in him. The rookie contract would expire, and we've seen, you know, you look at a Matt Flynn, where teams will take a chance on a guy that has very limited starting experience in the NFL. Correct. They'll trade for them, or they'll just sign them outright.
Ryan Mallett got traded for this year, for example.
Yeah.
So, something to keep in mind. And again, we're not saying if you think there's a very talented quarterback there in the middle rounds that you're getting great value on, you don't go in there and take him. Look, the Giants took Ryan Nassib, and quite frankly, I was very impressed by Ryan Nassib in the late preseason and the way he's adjusted to this new system under Ben McAdoo. I wouldn't be excited to run him out of town. I love him as the backup quarterback right now. I think if he stepped in, he would give the Giants a decent chance to win football games. I really do.
And as more and more he gets familiar with the system, it's going to help in terms of his development moving forward. So, you know, they have youth, they have upside at that position. I don't think the urgency is to now bring in another young quarterback. Plus, remember, the Giants are not the type of team that's going to keep three quarterbacks. Actually, very few teams in the NFL now keep three quarterbacks. So if you draft another young guy, John, you're going to have to get rid of somebody.
201-939-4513. Johnny Mack, let's go to line three next. Raphael in Pennsylvania. Raphael, what's going on, bud?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, bud?
I just called to talk about linebackers in this particular case. I know it's early to talk about the draft and all that, but I like UCLA's Michael Kendricks.
Okay.
Why do you like him? Kendrick, sorry.
Why do you like him?
Yeah. I seen his tape, and you know, statistically, 130 something tackles, and he's been over 100 tackles for 3 years now. He just seems like a pretty instinctual linebacker. You know, a classic three down linebacker, could probably stay in the coverage. I heard a lot of people say he's not really good at coverage, but what I've seen, he's not too bad.
Okay, so this is Eric Kendricks, Michael Kendricks, who plays the Eagles' brother.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Well, if he's anything like his brother, I'm sure that he's got a great deal of upside. I haven't watched enough UCLA film to evaluate him at this point, but I will say Michael Kendricks has developed into a very nice linebacker for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Excellent.
Very
play.
Great fit for that system. So if Eric is anything like him and they feel that he's got the potential, he certainly would be a player to watch out for.
Yep, agreed. I wanted to know what you think about the Giants linebackers. You think they're going to re-sign Jaquan Williams or Paysinger and Mark Herslich? Do you think any of those guys have a chance to get re-signed?
Well, Herslich has been re-signed before. He's familiar with the system, and he's valuable as a special teams player. So, you know, that is something that the Giants obviously hold in very high regard. It's not just the guys they're going to play every single down at the linebacker position. Beeson's under contract. McClain's under contract. You know, some injury concern with Beeson. You want to have some depth at that position. I think they're going to explore all of their options, and bringing back a few of the usual suspects will be included within that process, because at the end of the day, if the Giants have learned anything as well as the fan base, injuries are a part of the game, and you need to protect yourself. You can never have too many at one position. You can never have too many guys at a position which requires a lot of game planning and a lot of familiarity with the system, because the linebackers, they're relied upon very heavily in this defensive scheme, especially when you talk about stopping the run, and you're going up against a lot of running backs in this division, you know, that are elusive and have a great deal of versatility, whether it be the Alfred Morris, who's the more ground and pound guy, or the LeSean McCoy and Darren Sproles, who are the type of guys that can catch balls out of the backfield and run out of the edges.
Okay. And question, I always hear about being short and being slow. Chris Borland, for example, I thought I was really high on him when he was coming out of the draft, and they said he was too slow and this, that, and the third. But he seems to be a really great linebacker for the 49ers.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, why doesn't the Giants ever take a chance on those guys and pull the trigger when they're dropping a couple rounds and they actually do have talent?
Well, honestly, one of those guys that was considered those two-on-two quote type of things was Greg Jones, a linebacker they drafted out of Michigan State a few years ago. Now, he didn't end up working out, but he was one of those guys that was a tackling machine. He was good near the line of scrimmage. And, look, he didn't work out. So the Giants have taken a guy like that before. Here's the thing. What you want to find these days with the way the NFL is run, especially in the division when you're dealing with the Eagles spread system, the Cowboys offense with all these guys that can catch passes in the middle of the field. They've run 2-3 tight ends, whether it's Escobar or Jason Witten. You need linebackers that can cover and be on the field for all three downs. When you draft a guy, and again, Borland happened to work out, but you have to be aware of these guys that can only be on the field for a couple downs and run situations, considering how pass-heavy the NFL has become.
Okay.
Thanks, Raphael.
Appreciate the call, right. Raphael. Thanks so much.
On Eric Kendricks. 6 foot, 230 pounds. So, number one, that's slightly undersized for a linebacker at 230. My guys over at CBS Sports, Rob Rang and Dane Brugler, who we do have on the show very often during draft time, and we will again this year, they seem to think he's a top 50 guy. He could be a second rounder, late first, if he does well in the combine, the Senior Bowl, and things like that. Again, they think he should be a little bit better in terms of coverage, but he's a pretty good hitter, even at 230. So there you go, Eric Kendricks, as we continue to expand the draft.
Inside linebacker, in terms of at least his strength, I believe.
Yes, that's correct.
So I think the Giants also need to look at, you know, what the biggest need is if somebody leaves via free agency. You know, right now, Beeson, McClain, you use as your middle linebacker. Is the need more on the outside, or is the need more on the inside? That's another discussion that has to take place.
And he was the Buckus Award winner, the top linebacker in the nation this year. So take that for whatever you will.
The other thing I wanted to throw out, and Raphael, the last caller, was talking about, you know, the Niners taking late round picks on linebackers. Jaquan Williams, remember, was a sixth round pick.
Great
so,
point.
You know, the Giants have taken chances with some guys who play the linebacker position in the later rounds. It's just a matter of, can you strike gold more often than not?
201-939-4513. David Rochester. David.
Oh, boy.
How are you, pal? Dave called into the Tino last week. He was
really
very excited. He was like a kid on
wow.
Christmas.
Wow, well, I'm not surprised based on his track record. What's happening, Dave?
Yeah. Hey, buddy. Hey, Lance, I haven't talked to you this year.
I know.
Things are good. The apartment's doing good.
Absolutely.
Good, Giants.
Well, you remember everything. We can't get anything past
Hey, look, Lance's apartment on New Year's was great. There were women all over the place for him. He was very satisfied.
Yes, it was the most happening place.
Very good. That's the man. He's the man. But the boys, is Danny Salamone still around? And then, the new girl. What's her name? The new screener chick.
I have no idea who you're talking about. We don't have any female call screeners, as far as I understand.
Well, I don't know. Emma may have taken calls one day. I'm not sure.
I'm sorry. That's a joke.
Oh, okay. I didn't know where we were going with that.
All right, that went right over our head.
Yeah. Usually you rely on real life observations here, Dave. So you threw us a little curveball there.
I think Dave needs to get back to the material writing.
Yes, apparently. You know, it's the off season. You got time to hone the craft now.
But I was thinking maybe this year, 2015, we could do something a little different, maybe around draft time.
What do you want to do,
Dave? You know, maybe get me, Mike Farmer, Vic Fontana. You should have, like, an in-studio audience, and we could all come down, and then we could come in and hang out and answer questions and, you know, have, like, a little party inside the studio there.
Do you know how disappointed they'd be to see our studio? We could fit maybe two more people in this room, and that's it. I mean, seriously.
You'd be sitting on one of our laps, unfortunately, if that'd be the case. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Dave.
I just want to say hi to you guys. I love you.
Appreciate
Sounds good,
it,
Dave. Good chatting with you. Always a blast when David Rochester calls up. You know, we forgot to ask him, how's the Facebook page doing? I'm curious.
Yeah,
I haven't checked that out. The Paul Dottino White Pants Facebook page, for those of you who are interested. It's a huge following on social media. You should certainly check that out.
I think we need to repost that link on Twitter.
We may have to get the likes up a little bit more. You know, I don't know if he's updated the page. You know, normally he said, you know, what Paul Dottino and his white pants do during the course of the week and all activities where they go shopping and so forth. This show is clearly going in 17 different directions.
You know, because if you tweet about his Facebook page, he might get like one or two more followers.
Absolutely. I mean, with my followers and my popularity, he's bound to at least go up maybe half a point.
He also might lose three or four.
That's very likely as well. Absolutely. It fluctuates up and down.
201-939-4513. Stas is in Washington. Stas, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, fellas? Hey, three
Doing well, Stas.
Hitters.
What you got?
So, one, Brandon Treif out of Iowa. I have officially have a man crush on this dude, okay? I checked out his information, and I got some clippings of this guy doing power cleans of 430 pounds. And not only that, his feet are amazing. Like this guy, for a big body, he moves amazingly side to side. And when I've seen some clips where he was slightly out of position, but because this guy's got so much power, he's been able to pancake defenders with one hand. We need this guy. If he's available, I really hope we take him and he becomes the right tackle.
Now, Stas, I want to wait until the combine, Stas, but early reports seem to indicate people think he's going to fit better as a guard than a tackle, and that's fine. The Giants can draft a guard. I got no problem with that. But just something to keep in mind moving forward, that people, I think, even more so than Zach Martin last year, see him as more of a guard than a tackle based on his athleticism and his arm length and a lot of the nonsense.
And if he's a right guard or he's a left guard, I'm running behind him on every play if I'm the running back. I'm just saying. The guy is a monster.
All right,
that's
what else
one.
You got?
Second, I've been hearing a lot of people saying that they want the Giants to take chances on the draft, and I just feel it's kind of weird because, like, the last year or so, all we're complaining about is, oh, we're taking too many chances on the draft. I really liked the way we drafted last year when everything was very extremely calculated, and I feel like we got our best draft class since, like, 2007, and I don't think we took many long shots. I think we took a lot of good calculated risks. And I think that's what we should do going into this year as well, especially drafting as high as we're drafting. If we're intelligent about our picks, we should come out with, you know, at least three starters out of this draft if we go into that. I don't want to take risks on because if someone has speed or someone doesn't. Those are the guys that end up not panning out. Lastly, and I'll get your opinions on this off the call, is I know people are fascinated with them, and I keep hearing this, but I do not care about the mobile quarterback. I want a pocket passer. I want a guy who's going to read defenses and you're not going to confuse him. Now, Philson said it best. If football was a one-man sport, Cam Newton would be the best team in the league. But it's not. You need someone who's going to be cerebral. All right, if they have some wheels on them and they can roll out like the way Steve Young used to do, or even like the way Russell Wilson does now, I still want a guy who's going to work the pocket and who's going to read the defenses and who's going to use his teammates, not somebody who's a one-man show, because – those guys don't win Super Bowls. I have never seen one of those guys, a full-on mobile quarterback, win Super Bowls.
Well, Stas, and not to cut you off, Stas,
who could move,
I'll let you continue.
Wilson, who's a pocket passer,
the other
move.
Thing is these mobile quarterbacks don't last. They have no durability, so that's the other thing. They don't stay healthy.
I know. One hit and they're gone. I mean, look it. How scary was RG3 in his first year? Everyone was scared of him. No one's scared of him anymore because they're like, well, he's banged up. He's not the same guy. Once you take that niche away from them of that speed, then what do they have to fall back on? I want somebody who's going to be able to go in there, and even if he's not 100%, his mind is 100%, and he can still get the ball where it needs to be. That's what I want at the end of the day. So I'll take your comments on that off air, guys. Awesome as always.
Thank you, Stas.
See you guys. Talk to you guys later.
You guys, Stas. Appreciate
it. Let me say
call.
This about what Stas said, and I think he's 100% right. You don't need a quarterback that needs to go out there and rush for 80 yards in a game. like a Colin Kaepernick or something like that. You do want somebody, though, mobile enough to slide in the pocket, like a Romo. Like, you know, Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers are actually very, very good athletes, much better than even a Romo. They can get out there and run. They ran like 4.5s, 4.6s at the combines. They're very fast players. So I would consider them just as mobile as a Colin Kaepernick. But those guys are really good in the pocket as well. And they use that to buy time to throw the football. And frankly, he brought up Cam Newton in a negative light. I think Cam, a lot more than other mobile quarterbacks that have come out of college, has adapted to being more of a pocket passer. He will stay in the pocket, he'll make his reads, and he'll deliver the ball. And I think he's really adjusting to an NFL type of system extremely well, to be quite honest. So even though they did run some of that, you know, read option and zone read stuff in that playoff game, in round one and in round two, they used a lot of that Auburn stuff that he used to run in college. But look, you don't have to have a mobile quarterback to win. You don't. Now, can you win with a mobile quarterback with the right guys around him? I think you can. The 49ers came very close to beating Baltimore, and frankly, I think they were the better team that year. The Ravens just happened to beat them on that particular day. But, yeah, I mean, you need a guy in the NFL that's going to sit in the pocket, read the defense, deliver the ball when it needs to go, and protect the football.
You want the balanced quarterback. You were just talking about Cam. I think that says a lot about Mike Shula, the offensive coordinator, helping him develop, because when he first came into the league, obviously the option was run, run, run. Then you realize you're going to take your fair share of hits. You get the rib injuries and so forth. In order to survive in this league, you're going to have to be more developed within the pocket. Colin Kaepernick also came in, took the league by storm when he filled in for Alex Smith. And what happens, John, is defenses learn your tendencies. So you have to adjust. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, based on his numbers, he took somewhat of a step back. It also didn't help that the receivers and the tight ends weren't fully healthy and making consistent plays throughout this season,
too.
Well,
and the problem, me, with the 49ers this year is that they asked Colin Kaepernick to do a lot more. You know, in his first year and a half playing quarterback for them, he was asked to make a play here or there. You know, throw for 170 yards, rush for 75, you'll be fine. This year, the way they ran their offense, they didn't run the ball a whole lot.
Offensive line was banged up,
too. They needed Colin Kaepernick to throw for 300 bills if they wanted to win football games, and he wasn't ready for it. Now, Colin Kaepernick could become better to the point where he is going to be ready for it. I think it'll be very interesting who becomes the next 49ers head coach, who becomes the next 49ers offensive coordinator, who's going to be the guy that's going to bring Kaepernick under his wing and try to develop him, like you said, the way Mike Shula, in a lot of ways, helped develop Cam Newton, the way Kyle Shanahan, I think, worked with RG3 his first season and brought him a little slowly in the NFL. And then year two, things started to fall apart, the injury, obviously. So I think it's very important to see where Kaepernick goes this year in terms of a coach and whether or not he can develop into a little bit of a better zone reader, not in terms of the run, but in terms of reading the defense's zones and trying to read that defense and deliver better, more accurate, and consistent throws from the pocket.
Well, having the running game is a great security blanket for a mobile quarterback.
All the difference.
You look at Carolina, even though there's not one star guy between D'Angelo Williams, Jonathan Stewart, Fozzie Whitaker, your long-lost relative who's a cousin. You know, I mean, they've brought in everybody in that running game.
And by the way, that and Mike Tolbert, that's why they were so good at the end of the year. Because they had a running game.
Correct.
Jonathan Stewart was actually healthy for the first time in 5 years.
They played good defense. They pounded the football. So they didn't need Cam to throw the ball 45 times. And that's why I brought up Tony Romo this year, too. Dallas had a running game, a respectable defense. So the load was not put on his shoulders in terms of having to carry the offense.
And how about this? The Chargers, another example. 2 years ago, they ran the ball with Ryan Matthews extremely well. This year, he gets hurt. They have trouble finding a consistent running game. Phillip Rivers is dealing with some injuries. He could have put the team on his back and win.
Absolutely. The running game could do wonders, and that's why it'll be interesting. And I'm not trying to downgrade Russell Wilson. I think he's a tremendous talent, and compared to the other younger quarterbacks, I think he's very polished. He's very good off the run and throwing, and obviously he still has that mobility factor.
And he's accurate.
He's very accurate. Well. However, with that being said, and this gets back to the conversation about quarterbacks needing help, he's had a great running game since he came into the league, John. He's had a game-changing defense. Those are tremendous insurance policies for a quarterback. Every young QB would love to come into that type of a situation.
When you're not asked to do as much, you're able to have more success. And that's not taking anything away from Russell Wilson. If I'm a team, I'd love to have him as my starting quarterback moving forward. He's young. He's intelligent. He's smart. I think he has all the tools to become a long-term great quarterback in this league, but do I think he's a great quarterback right now on the same level as the Mannings, as Brady, as Romo, as Rodgers, as Breeze, as Roethlisberger, as those guys? No, I don't think he's there yet. I think if you throw Russell Wilson into the Packers offense, let's say, and you're going to go be Aaron Rodgers, do I think he could be Aaron Rodgers? I don't. Do I think you could take Aaron Rodgers, put him into the Seahawks offense, and tell him to be Russell Wilson? Yeah, I think he'd be damn good at that. And that, I think, is the difference. Like, I don't think – let me put it this way. What was the Colts record this year? What, they go 11-5? 10-6?
In that vicinity, yeah.
If you substitute Andrew Luck for Russell Wilson, what's the Colts record this year? 7-9?
You think it's going to downgrade that much?
I think you're losing at least 2 wins.
See, I don't know about that. I mean, I think he's polished enough.
But he has to score 30 a game to win with the Colts, the way their defense played this
true.
Year.
True. You have a little bit more pressure, and you don't have the insurance of the running game.
No insurance. He has zero running game.
But let's hold on, John. When Bradshaw was there, though, they had a running game going. They at least had a receiver.
No, he was more than that.
Bradshaw lasted more than that. Let me see here. I think Bradshaw played more than 6 games this season.
What, 8? Mike Farmer's going to start screaming at me on Twitter about my
Bradshaw. We'll look it up here. I mean, because earlier in the season, they did have a semblance of a running game here.
What do you have?
He played 10 games this season.
Games. Okay.
So, he was there for more than half the season.
There you go. No, but you know what? He was active, but he didn't run a whole lot. Go to
he
his
did
game
it,
log.
But remember, remember throwing the ball to a running back out of the backfield for 5 or 6 yards is just as effective to me as a running play.
But he,
when you look at his
all
numbers.
All right, he had 7 catches in late October. That's fair. All right, that's fair.
They utilized him heavily in the passing game.
That's fair. All right. He had rolled for longer than I remember.
They don't have, though, a Marshawn Lynch, though,
nor they
as a fair comparison.
Nor do they have a great offensive line.
Correct. Yeah.
My point is that, look, and this, again, nothing against Russell Wilson. I think he's a very good quarterback. But if you ask him to do what the Colts need Andrew Luck to do, I think he's going to run into some problems.
I would agree. I don't know if it's going to go down to 7-9. I mean, I still think they're in the hunt for the playoffs, and they may get to 9 wins. I don't know if it's going to jump from, let's say, 11-7.
I'll buy that.
Yes, will there be a downgrade? Absolutely.
Now, in the upgrade for Russell Wilson, I should point this out, too. He doesn't have a ton of weapons in Seattle. He doesn't have great.
Well, that's why. So that's an upgrade. Yeah, I mean,
so he gets help there having T.Y. Hilton, which is a good point.
Correct. I mean, give him all that talent to the receiver. That's why when you brought up the Packers earlier, John, and you said if you put Russell Wilson into the Packers system, I said, well, if you're going from Jermaine Kearse and Lockett to Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb, I'd say he's going to be in pretty good shape.
But do you think Russell Wilson's making that throw that Rodgers did at the end of that Cowboys game, where he's on to his 5th read, as Aaron Rodgers said to Michael Silver
at
the
NFL point.
After that game? Is he getting to his 5th read and making that throw, or is he trying to tuck the ball and run and maybe try to get a first down?
And he's probably tucking the ball and running because he feels confident in the running game, and that comes with experience.
Of course.
Aaron Rodgers has a little bit more years under his belt, but is Russell Wilson not going to throw the bomb down the field to Jordy Nelson like he did in the playoff game against the Panthers? I think he's going to take his chances because he believes his receivers will go out and make plays for him.
No, and the reason I think Russell Wilson, I think, will continue to improve, and I think as Moore gets put on his shoulders, I do think he's going to handle it. And I think he can become a quarterback of the same caliber as, you know, Rodgers, as a Breeze. He can become that type of quarterback. I'm not saying he's not capable of doing that. I think he can. I think he will when he's needed to and when he's asked to. I just don't think he's been asked to do that quite yet. And I don't think he's necessarily quite as prepared as other people might think to carry that type of load. Because I do think it's a very big change for a quarterback when you're asked to do as much as some of these quarterbacks are asked to do on some of these teams.
And you could bring it back to the Giants with respect to Eli Manning.
Yeah.
Years have fluctuated. Sometimes it's been a game-changing defense, so you don't need as much from your offense. Some years the defense struggles. You need a little bit more from Eli Manning. That's why when everyone evaluates quarterbacks, and Susan, who called it earlier, was talking about an article that was written, and John and I obviously will look at it a little bit closer when we're off the air in terms of how they rate quarterbacks. I think one of the most important elements when you rate quarterbacks, and it's what John and I are touching on right now, is the elements around the quarterback, more so than the game situations, whether he had the ball in the fourth quarter. You know, tell me about how many years that quarterback played with a defense that he could rely on getting a stop when he needed it the most. Tell me about the offensive line. How consistent was the offensive line play during the course of his tenure? Did he have some semblance of a running game? How was the receiving core? Were there a number of drop passes? Case in point with Eli Manning. Remember a few years ago, threw a lot of interceptions. However, It's one thing to look at the box score and say Eli Manning with 20-some-odd interceptions. Then you take into consideration the game log and you remember, well, a number of them were deflections. A number of them were the receiver not being in the right position to make plays. Then the interceptions don't look nearly as bad as they appear in the box score. So those elements, you have to bring that into consideration when you're evaluating the quarterback play.
201-939-4513. Let's go to the phones. And our final call of the show is Frank down in Tampa. Frank, what's going on?
Hey, hello, guys. Great to talk with you again.
How you doing, Frank?
What's happening, Frank?
Good. Very much. I just had a few things I wanted to go over. I'm concerned, guys, and I'm very concerned because the more I hear and read about people talking about us needing, you know, to revamp or to strengthen our offensive line, and I got to tell you guys, I'm very concerned that Mr. Reese is the one who's making these decisions. He just seems to me to be a poor offensive line evaluator. If you go back and look from the, you know, the free agents that he signed from Boss on down, the you know, he seems to either get guys that stink or that are fragile or both. And you know, look at the. But what really concerns me is that we're even having to talk about that. We should have the luxury at this moment of being able to draft for whatever need we need at whatever position. And, you know, sadly, it's very rare. You know, it's kind of good news, bad news. It's very rare that at the peak of a top-notch quarterback's career, the team is picking twice, basically, with a top-10 pick. I mean, you know, it's almost unheard of, and yet we have that luxury right now. But look, you know, look what Mr. Reese has done in the past year in his moves. He basically franchised Beatty. He drafted a very high second-round pick. He had a first-round pick, two supposed top-notch free agent linemen, and two other supposed good offensive linemen, including one, I believe, that was a former second-round pick. That's just in the last year, forgetting his other draft picks. And we should have a Dallas type of offensive line in place, not shopping for people, not having to utilize these high draft picks on these type, you know, on even thinking about the offensive line.
Well, Frank, one thing to keep in mind, Dallas used two top 15 picks on offensive linemen.
Okay, and we have a first and a high second, but and then supposedly a top-notch free agent who should have been better than either one of those, you know, based on the fact that he's a five-year veteran.
Jeff Schwartz didn't play last year. He was hurt.
Well, that's what I'm saying, but he seems to have a knack of either getting guys that aren't any good or like Boss and Schwartz that are fragile. And I didn't even put Walton in there. I'm sorry. I left Walton.
Well, Walton stayed healthy, though, this year.
Well,
and Walton had a track record, though, of getting hurt. Well, the reason I'm bringing that up, Frank, is you're claiming that they're bringing in players that don't show durability, but J.D. Walton comes from the opposite end of the spectrum. He's a guy that had major injury concerns. He's brought in, and he stays healthy the whole season.
No, what I'm trying to say is we've got a garden variety, but what do we have? A line that can't pass block and can't run block. I mean, based on those teams, he basically made a move and a half at each position, And how can we possibly be thinking offensive line?
Frank. It took
yes.
These Cowboys offensive linemen. It took Tyron Smith 3 years to become the player that he is now. It took Travis Frederick 2 years to become the player that he is now. So you know, I think you got to give Weston Richburg and Justin Pugh some time.
Okay. Oh, well, that's fine. If you can sit there and tell me that, of course, Frank, we don't need to do anything on the offensive line. We have a franchise left tackle. We got a high second and a first-round pick. We got two top free agents and three other ones. We're all set. Only a maniac would be talking about an offensive lineman. But if you can't tell me that, then we made some horrible decisions.
Well, so Frank,
have it both ways.
No, Frank, I'm not having it both ways. I want to go back in time, and you use the Cowboys as an example.
No,
so
I'm not saying you're having it.
Last year, all right, the Cowboys had a first-round pick at center and a first-round pick at left tackle, right? They had used money to bring in a guy like Doug Free. He was making about $5 million a year, right? They had Mackenzie Bernadeau, one of the guards, making around $2 to $3 million a year. By your logic, they should have said, we're fine, don't worry about it, we're good to go. No. What they did, they drafted Zach Martin because he was the best player on their board, and they turned what was an average offensive line or below average offensive line into one of the best offensive lines in football. So just because there are names and numbers and round draft picks, sometimes it takes the right mix of guys to turn individuals into a great unit. And I think what you've had the last couple years is a lot of moving parts because of a lot of the injuries. So you did see at the end of the last year, at the end of this year, Frank, and you have to admit this, the last four or five games, you saw the running game get a little bit better. Now, was it where you needed to be moving forward? Certainly not. But it did improve slightly. Pass protection the last four or five games certainly got a lot better. And I think that had a lot to do with these guys getting some chemistry with each other playing. Now, are we saying the status quo was fine and you shouldn't get the offensive line better and who they have is great? No, I don't think anybody's saying that. John Maron, Tom Coughlin didn't say that. Jerry Reese didn't say it at their postseason press conferences. Now, does that mean that there were some mistakes made on the offensive line? Yeah, I think that's fair to say. No one would deny there weren't some mistakes made over the course of the last 7 years trying to replace that great offensive line that led them to two Super Bowls. Certainly there were. So you have to move forward, deal with the current situation you're in, and do what's best for the team.
Because I'm not even throwing in the Brewers, et cetera, who, you know, kind of make me ill just talking about them. But, I mean, there's some bad talent evaluation, I think, that has occurred on that offensive line. And we do have this, you know, this luxury of having these two high picks. And, I'm just concerned that this is basically our last best chance. I think if we blow this, if we don't have a top-notch offensive line in place by the end of next year, it's over for us, I think. I think for Tom, and it's over for Eli, and I'd hate to see that. You know, I think they deserve to go out, you know, on top and not, you know, not this embarrassment, really, that it's been the last, you know, the last two. So, believe me, I'm an optimist, and I want it to go well. I'm just concerned. I'm concerned that he's, you know, with his evaluation of offensive linemen. But if you can indulge me real quick in Yeah, I never deal in what-ifs, but I allow myself at the end of the season once in one or two. And my goodness, I'd like to see David Wilson on that field with Mr. Beckham at the same time. Boy, would that be something to see. And that's just a real shame. Then the other, if you like to play some real fantasy football, would it be nice just once someone like Eli at this stage of his career to say, you know what, I want to get the fans, Mr. Mara, Tom, and the rest of the guys another championship. I got all the money I can ever spend. I'll take $5 million, take the other 15, get whatever we need. Let's build a dynasty. Now I'm waking up.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you are then waking up at the end, Frank, and appreciate the phone call.
Thanks, bud.
That's always the hope for the fan bases, whether it be the NBA, the NFL, MLB, that your star player just wakes up one day and says, you know what, pay me in cereal or food, and I'll go out and play football.
Not everybody's Dirk Nowitzki.
No, not everybody's also Tom Brady, too, which is unique. Everybody uses those guys as examples.
So Brady moved money around more than he actually took a legitimate
Correct. He restructured cuts. The contract, yeah.
So just to keep that in mind.
But that's also important. It's not necessarily about taking less money, John. Right. It's also just how you structure your deal. You can have a lot of the money come to you a little bit later on when maybe it's tight in terms of the salary cap in the first
example,
few years.
For example, Carmelo Anthony was a real great guy to the Knicks, taking that, you know, $100,000 pay cut next year. So you
Absolutely.
Could, you know, sign that guy out of the D-League. Very generous.
Gives you a lot of flexibility.
Very, a lot of
Tremendous.
Flexibility.
Thanks, Good buddy. Example.
Yes.
Great example. Anytime we can bring the Knicks into the equation,
I think my tongue
really
was
puts things in perspective.
Firmly planted enough in cheek during that
yes,
one.
Yes, so I could tell. But you visually made it very straightforward for everybody. The facial expression, you really sold it. It's quite a performance.
All right, Lance will be with you tomorrow. I might pop in as well. We're trying to balance a couple different things going on at the same time. Thanks for joining us. We'll be with you tomorrow on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For Lance Mano, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time.
Have a good one.
Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35, 30.